She speaks globally as the trademarked ambassador of happiness, and she lives right here in St. Petersburg. Maura Sweeney with episode 22 of the ABCs of Now.
Hi, everyone. This is Maura Sweeney, and welcome to episode 22 of the ABCs of Now. If you're wondering where I've been in this series, you're not alone, because as I've conducted these episodes of going through the alphabet from Z back to the letter A, I have had myself to wait for each new word that is assigned to each letter, and then for the content that goes along with it. When I originally started this series, it was an idea for the time that we're living in now, a time of tremendous change all over the world, epic change, seismic change, where there's a lot of sense of shift. And it was the whole idea of going through everything we learned in the way of elementary concepts, things that we formed our world view from, and even a view of ourselves and humanity, and one by one, taking a concept, looking at it again, and assessing it for its veracity and determining whether or not it's something in the same form that we can take forward with us into the world yet to come. So this last one, I thought, I can't believe it's been this long since I did episode 21. And when I finally got the word for episode 22, which is the letter E, it took me weeks before I even got some content. So for all of you who have been on this journey with me, thank you for sticking with it. I know that there's always something to be gleaned from each one of these, even things I'm learning myself. And oddly enough, and perhaps not, today's episode, E is for Everybody, ended up with content that I believe is quite timely, even though you might find we'll be going into some history. So again, I just told you we're on the letter E for episode 22 as we are working backward through the alphabet, and the word is everybody. What we're going to cover today is first, what might seem awfully silly is the meaning of everybody, what it is and what it is not. Then we're going to go into lyrics to a popular song from the middle of the 20th century, last century. Next, we're going to look at a few examples of how the lyrics from that very popular song proved quite universal and true even today. We'll look at a bit of surprising. Now, some of you may think at first glance, like, oh, Maura, this sounds like it's going to be boring because it's history. But you'll find, as I did, that it's actually quite eye-opening. We're going to look at everybody again and seeing others equally and how it might actually be a novel and revolutionary concept. I'll share with you two very short thoughts on how it can play out as we look at everybody. And lastly, I'm going to read a short passage from a book that my daughter and I read when I was homeschooling her that took place at the close of World War I. By the time we're done with this, I'm hoping that all of us, myself being maybe, let's say, the narrator in this process, but you, no matter where you live, no matter what your world is looking like to you at the present time, will come out with some new ideas. And I want to even say something beyond that. I want to say, we'll all come out of this with a little bit more freedom than we went into it. So are you ready for episode 22 in the ABCs of Now? And it is E is for Everybody. So you're going to think, this is so elementary, Maura. E is for everybody. Well, what does everybody mean? In the dictionary, it says every person, everyone, and all people. Synonyms include all and sundry, anybody, each one, every person, masses, people, the public, the whole, young and old. So I would almost flip this on its side and say, who doesn't everybody encompass? Everybody encompasses everybody. So we are going to be looking at the whole idea of, oh, is there an everybody? And who is that? And am I looking at the world as if I'm looking at everybody the same way? Or perhaps, am I looking at everybody in a different manner? Am I looking at them from a very exclusionary, or maybe, let's say, a biased way? So, secondly, I told you that I was going to share with you lyrics from a popular song. I knew it was a Broadway show that had become a movie, and I knew the people who did it, but apparently I had the title wrong. These are lyrics from a 1949 Rodgers and Hammerstein musical. You can look it up to find out more about it, but the musical is called South Pacific. Now, as I read these lyrics, some of you might be humming them in your head. I want you to listen very closely, because whether you are an older person or just a child, you will understand. Ready? You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed into your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. Now in here it says to hate all the people your relatives hate, but I believe in the course of these lyrics of this song that it's not just who your relatives hate. It could be who your ethnic group hates, who your nation is taught to hate, who your religion is taught to hate, who your neighbors are that you're taught to hate. It can go on and on and on. The operative word in this song from South Pacific is the word to teach or to be taught. And that means to impart knowledge or skill and to give instruction. Now, I want you to think about this. Someone else is giving you instruction. It's different from knowing something intuitively or inwardly. And do you notice how in this it says that you've got to be taught before you become able to think on your own, before you're 6 or 7 or 8. But even, I believe, as we age, as we get older, we are still being taught certain things, and these ideas are drummed in us repeatedly. And what these ideas do is undermine the concept of everybody by excluding and saying we're not like everybody else, or those people are not like us. And because of that, we're taught to hate, to fear, and we're taught to distance ourselves from people that might be far more like us than we know. There are other words for teach that I wanted to bring out. And are you ready? One of the words include drill. Have you ever been drilled on something where it's literally drilled into your mind that you could maybe come up with it in your sleep? And another word for teach is to indoctrinate. Indoctrination often happens when we are given messages or told something that's repeated to us in such a way or delivered to us in such a way that we actually forget what we already knew inwardly as part of our own truth and our own reality. So that is the second thing I wanted to go over. The third thing, I wanted you to give you examples of how the lyrics from that song actually do prove quite universal and true even today. And a couple of things came to mind. And I always tell you this when I do this, I'm dating myself, but I do carry things right up to today. Did you know when I was a small child, I had to actually learn that Madison Avenue, that was responsible for a lot of commercials, movies, print, and TV advertising, considered blonde-haired and blue-eyed children the premium brand. Now, I had very dark eyes. My eyes are dark, dark brown. My hair is brown when it's not gray. And I didn't know that blue-eyed and golden-haired children were supposed to be considered premium. I didn't know. I had to learn it. And that's what happens with all of us. I want to give you another example of something I remembered from growing up. I remember men saying that women made poor drivers. And that was said repeatedly. Oh, women drivers, they're terrible. Well, that might have been repeated over and over and over again many decades ago until insurance company statistics showed otherwise. There's a third one. Now, as much as I told you that blonde children were considered premium brand for advertisers, we were also told when I was growing up that blonde women were dumb. Now, we don't think that today, but do you know why a lot of those things were thought years ago? It was because they were told that repeatedly. They were ideas that were repeated constantly, as in indoctrinated to the point where people actually believed it, even though some of those ideas had no basis in truth. I also want to give you something that also relates, and something that goes into my adult life. We know that we've heard many times that blacks don't like or trust whites, and in some cases, that is certainly founded. But I want to tell you something that I, being a person who's of a lighter skin, have encountered from some blacks a very palpable dislike and distrust of me without even knowing me. So I want you to think about that. It works both ways. Why? Because certain groups are told or maybe warned not to trust those other people. But I want to share with you something funny. When I had gone, oh goodness, it was to Africa, when I was in my 30s, I guess it was, I encountered such great curiosity and even glee, from tiny little children on a remote island, and they had never encountered a white person before, and they were looking at me as if to say, oh, what is this? And the children were laughing, and I remember they were rubbing my hand as if to say, how come she's got this different color looking skin? They're rubbing it off, maybe thinking there was white sand on me, and they were hysterical laughing. And then I remembered showing these little children a picture of my 4-year-old daughter at the time. The picture was taken from her school. And so these little children, little black children in Africa on this remote island who were never taught anything, are looking at not only me as an adult white person, but then they were looking at a 4-year-old daughter of mine in a photograph, and the children were hysterical laughing. They did not feel fear. They did not sense distrust. They thought it was just so funny because they never saw a person or a little person that looked like that. So that gives you some idea as to how many times we can be, in a sense, duped by thinking that we are so different from other people, when in reality, we have been taught to think a certain way and not to see the everybody in us all. Okay, now, beware, because I told you I'm going to give you what I consider a bit of surprising history. And when you hear history, some people think, oh, that's so boring. But I'm going to give it to you in a way that I hope you will clearly understand. Now know that I'm coming to you from the United States, and you might be living in another country, but I want you to know that this was revealing information for me from the United States of America. In 1948, after World War II, there was something called the Smith-Mundt Act that was signed. And it was the beginning of the Cold War, when the nations that were supposedly democrat and free were supposed to be at, I would say, a sense of distrust with all of the communists. So at that point, this national piece of legislation was creating an information service, think of a news bureau, to disseminate abroad as into other countries, information about the United States, its people, its life methods, and to aggressively interpret American foreign policy abroad. What did this mean? It meant that there was legislation in our country that said we're going to disseminate information into foreign countries that are going to make them think and believe and perceive certain things about America. It was done on purpose. Now, this Smith-Mundt Act was updated in 1972, and at the time, it was updated to ban, that means stop, disseminating or sharing within the United States any information about the United States, its people, and policies that was being prepared for nations abroad. So you might not understand that, but what it was saying is that we had the freedom in the United States to send out news releases about our country, whether or not they were absolutely factual, let's say. And yet, we were told that we could not have that same freedom to send out these designed pieces of news here in the United States. In 1985, this was added on to, but I want to go to the year 2010. We took the same act that started out in 1948, and it was updated for the global information age, when newspapers were kind of going away, and suddenly we had this giant internet where information could flow immediately and without barriers around the globe. And what it did during 2010 is our government decided that news outlets cannot be sued or found guilty for let's say, creating propaganda on its own people. Now, I want you to think about that. Let's say we were a nation that wanted other nations to think of us a certain way, and we could do it because they were considered maybe the enemy. But suddenly now, we were given permission, let's say, to news agencies here in the United States, in our own country, to disseminate the same kinds of information, I would call it propaganda, on our own citizens. And in 2012, that was updated again. At that point, it gave government officials, specifically the State Department and the Broadcasting Board of Governors officials, ready for this, power to disseminate what were previously foreign propaganda programs in the U.S. upon request. So that meant that in the past, if we thought we were at an information war with foreign countries and we could send them out pieces of news that would make them think or be afraid or have a perception of things that maybe weren't necessarily true, by the year 2012, our same government legislators decided that our own news bureaus here in the United States could create news that may or may not be true, deliver it here to citizens in the United States, and not be held responsible for it, meaning they couldn't be found guilty of anything, which is quite an interesting concept when you think about it. Quite. When we hear things like fake news, doesn't it sort of make you wonder now, how come we have so much fake news? And is it because people are allowed to disseminate fake news? And see, it can happen almost anywhere, including in our country. Now, don't lose sight of the fact that I'm talking about everybody, and I want to tell you why. It was because when I was growing up in elementary school, going through high school, even through university as a political science major, I remember feeling exceptionally proud, and let's say rather naive, of the fact that we had an open press, that we could have anything said in the press, and we could report on anything we wanted, and we could trust our press to tell us the truth. And I remember feeling proud about it because at the time when we did have a Cold War going on with Russia, Russia had a closed form of news. And I remember thinking, oh, those poor Russians, because the people don't know what they don't know. Well, the same could be said in part about people here in the United States today, that we've actually legalized it for news agencies to deliver us news that's not always real. Now, I'm going to go back in history yet again, and I found this so fascinating. Believe it or not, when I was homeschooling our daughter, and let's say she was maybe 8 years old, I remember learning history as a child in 7th and 8th grade and thinking, oh my gosh, this is so boring. It was all about dates and names of things. I would study it for a test and forget it, and none of it ever made any sense. So I do remember that when I was homeschooling our daughter, I thought, we're not going to do history the same way. And I would find books that would give history in more of a story or a narrative form, often told through living right in that era, sometimes through people that lived during that era. So you could almost position yourself in a time in history and be surrounded by what was going on during that time period. And suddenly a lot of pieces of history made sense because you were living through it as people lived through it during that time. Well, what struck me as I was preparing this current episode on E is for Everybody was something that I learned about with my daughter during World War I. Now, do you know our country had this belief or this, let's say, a collective thought that we would not get involved in wars of foreign nations? We just didn't do it. And yet, lo and behold, we ended up stepping into World War I. And it was a big shift in thinking. And I want you to think about this. A big shift in thinking because up until that time, Americans did not believe in getting personally involved in foreign wars. And yet, President Woodrow Wilson brought us into war. And this is what shocked me, learning as if for the first time, some American history with my 8-year-old daughter. I learned that when we decided to declare war for World War I, that President Wilson and his team at the White House actually created a PR, public relations team, to sell the war effort to our own citizens. Now, isn't that amazing? A public relations team through our own White House to jerry people up or to get people very excited to get engaged and behind a war. And just to give you a couple of things here, I found them quite interesting. One of the things that stood out most of all is you'll remember a picture of Uncle Sam. Remember that? Uncle Sam wants you. And he was dressed up and he represented somebody who was the ultimate American. And that image was designed during that time period to help Americans be aware of the war effort and also to buy or invest in U.S. bonds. So it actually was a way of getting everybody through repetition here in America behind the war effort and to spend their money on war bonds so that our nation had the funds to go to war. There were so many other things, and the big thing that I remember really struck me while studying with my daughter were some of the images made during that time, one of which showed the German people as being, oh my goodness, I would say less than human, almost barbaric. And so think about this. If you've never been to a foreign country and your own country is showing you repeated images of someone from a foreign land and they're created in such a way as to make you see those foreigners as less than human, less than yourself, different, frightening, angry, abusive, again, barbaric, then how would you feel? You'd want to go over there and fight. And so this was actually being done in World War I. And I say this because if we are taught in our world who to like and who to hate and who to fear, then maybe as we move forward during this time of shift into our new era to come, a new world ahead of us, a better world in which we can all take ownership, let's say, if we can all be part of it, then we can go in without, let's say, the lenses that help us see the world as others want us to see it, and that we can truly see it and see others as they can be seen, that we're not predisposed to see them in a wrong light without giving them either an opportunity or investigating on our own. Now, I want to finish this with something that came from another book. And this, again, I was learning in tandem with my daughter. The name of the book was called, or is called, The Yanks Are Coming. You might remember the song, The Yanks Are Coming, The Yanks Are Coming. It was one of the war songs probably created during World War I to get people anxious to get out on the field. And the writer of this book was Albert Marin, M-A-R-R-I-N. And the man had won many, many awards. And this is something that struck my daughter and me as we were closing in at the end of the story of World War I and how the American, they would call them the Doughboys at the time, had gone over to fight. We were actually there at the end of World War I. It had to do with Armistice Morning. Now, you might have heard of Armistice Day, and it was November 11th when the war was actually brought to a close. So listen to this one page in this book. Armistice Morning. German gunners blazed away, determined to use up their ammunition. Allied gunners, that would be the Americans and those that we were allied with, Allied gunners answered, but for a different reason. Everyone wanted to fire the war's last shot. Gun crews tied ropes to the firing mechanisms of cannon. Then 200 men pulled on each line at once. Oh, this was very sad. Hundreds died during those last few furious seconds. Now, the thing about Armistice Day is that it actually ended It ended the war at 11 minutes after 11 in the morning. So think about this. Then it says at 11 a.m., it all stopped. An eerie quiet settled over the Western Front. An hour earlier, Eddie Rickenbacker took off in his Spad. Now, he was flying, and we did have people flying during World War I. Orders had come that all pilots were grounded that morning. Now, for the first and only time, Rick disobeyed an order. The end of a world war was too good to miss, and he meant to have a bird's eye view of the event. So here we have a man who was fighting up in the skies, but he decided to go against orders, and he wanted to see what things were looking like on the ground when the war was called off. Here's what it reads. Without announcing his destination, he took off, heading for the front lines. Everywhere he saw men in gray and brown and blue, crouching in their positions, poised to shoot the enemy on sight. 1 minute to 11, 30 seconds, 10 seconds, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. Suddenly, men stood up, paused for a moment, and came toward each other. These are now, I want you to know, these are enemy enemy soldiers that were fighting and killing each other. And at 11:11, they all stopped. So here we have again, suddenly men stood up, paused for a moment, and came toward each other. Rickenbacker saw them toss helmets into the air, throw away their guns, and wave. As he turned north, he saw doughboys, and those would have been the Americans, and Jerry's, who would have been the Germans. Are you ready for this? Hugging each other, dancing, and exchanging cigarettes, which was, a move of goodwill back then. He flew up to the French sector around Verdun. He could hardly believe his eyes. After 4 years of butchery and hatred, Frenchmen and Germans were not only hugging each other, but kissing each other on both cheeks. The war was over. Now, I want you to think about this. There were young men, 17, 18, 19, 20. They were living in foxholes on both sides of the war. They were killing each other because both sides were being used to kill the other. And yet, when the war was pronounced over, these young men were so jubilant, they actually looked upon what were supposed to be their former enemies and hugged and kissed and danced and celebrated and shared their cigarettes as a means of sharing what little they had with each other. Everybody, there's a something in all of us that is in everybody. And as we leave one world behind and we start looking forward to a world to come, will we start looking at everybody as who we really are rather than with the labels and biases and fears that are indoctrinated by various, sometimes well-meaning people and other times people with an agenda, would have to make us believe. I told you I would finish with this. And that is, goodness, I have to look at my notes. All right, I want to share with you something. A friend of mine many years ago said to me, Maura, you said something to me one day when I was talking about some people maybe that I didn't like, or I was trying to get you to agree with me, she said, about some people. And she said, you said to me something I never forgot. You told me, Maura, this. You said, I come from what is whole, not what's divided. I come from what is whole, not from what's divided. Coming from what is whole is really seeing the everybody in us all. And I wanted to also share this with you, because many of you have probably heard this. A house divided cannot stand. As we move forward out of one world that has known one war after another, one division after another, one destruction after another of humanity upon humanity, can we actually start to see the everybody in us all, to give people a chance to view things for a moment out of our own minds and from our own intuition, and possibly avoid some of the sorrows and the sadness that we might be saying goodbye to in a former world as we look forward to building a new world yet to come? Those were some of my ideas that came as I got the word E is for everybody. So those are the thoughts for this most recent episode, episode 22, E is for everybody. I hope that this will give you something to think about. It was almost impossible to include the many ideas that were running through my head, but somewhere, somehow, in what I've shared, I hope that you can start seeing that whether it's religion, culture, appearance, language, age, economics, these things don't always have to separate us. Sometimes we can see the us in us all, and maybe in doing so can help create a much happier and wholesome world to come. So until the next time, this has been Maura with Maura for You.
More information about St. Pete's own Maura Sweeney at Maura4U.com.